Good morning. I'd like to call this meeting of the House Special Committee on Fisheries to order. The time is 11:05 a.m. Members present at this time, Representative Vance, Representative Story, Representative McCabe, Representative Christ Tompkins, Representative Ortiz, Speaker Stutes, and myself, Representative Tarr. Please let the record reflect we do have a quorum to conduct business. We'd ask members to please silence your cell phones as we get started. If you need to pass a note, please get the attention of the committee aide, Thatcher Brower. A big thank you to Shannon McCain, our committee secretary, and Alex Banizak from the Juno LIO for their support. Again, today we have the recording secretary operating remotely, so if we try to identify ourselves before we speak to help out with that. We have two agenda items. One is House Bill 26, the conflict of interest on Board of Fisheries and Board of Game. And the second item is House Bill 54, continued discussion of that legislation, including the public testimony and review of the fiscal notes. So the first item, if that's okay, any comments from committee members, is House Bill 26. We do, for questions, have both Alpheus Bullard from Legislative Legal and Aaron Peterson from the Assistant Attorney General available for questions if anyone needs that. We did not receive any amendments for this legislation, so that means we have committee discussion. Representative Christ Tompkins has previously expressed strong support for this bill. I don't know if anyone else would like to express their support.
I would.
Speaker Stutes.
I would. This is Representative Stutes, and I would absolutely like to express my support for this fabulous legislation. Thank you.
We do also have Glenn Haight available via Teams if there are any questions.
I will voice my support for this brilliant piece of legislation.
Thank you, Representative Ortiz. I love the enthusiasm. Anyone else? Representative Vance.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I've been hearing from both sides of this, and been hearing from people in the interior speaking to the Board of Game, and they obviously have, they rarely have, you know, members who conflict out and say, hey, we don't see why this is needed. And then I have people, you know, on the sport fish side who say, you know, we don't feel that there should be more undue influence, you know, to the conversation. So I've been weighing this out heavily on both sides. And obviously we hear more from the Comfish because they are the ones that are overwhelmingly conflicted out. And, you know, this is something that the legislature has talked about for a lot of years. And, you know, I want to listen to all sides to make sure that we are making a sound decision, because this deals with allocation. And, you know, I try to remove the emotion out of it and turn the table. And so I'm still taking, you know, consideration from people weighing on both sides. But one of the things that causes me to lean to support this is that members of the board are already deliberating off the record because their insight is needed. And so what we're asking is that it be on record for the public to see, and that the Fish and Game would have to consider their comments. And this was one of the arguments that was made, is that because it's on record, the Fish and Game would have to take into consideration. They can't just eliminate it. And my argument back to that is that we need to trust that the Fish and Game members are professionals, and that they should differentiate between statements that are made that are in a direct financial interest versus the comments that they make that speaks to the expertise in that field and in that region that they bring. That's the purpose of them being on the board, is because they have a wealth of knowledge in that fishery, in that region, in that type of fishing. And it's my intent that when those when those opinions are offered, that that the department and the other members are able to differentiate the difference of their contribution. If they feel like a member who is contributing to the conversation is making the comments to directly benefit themselves and not the area of expertise, they have the wisdom to see the difference. But also specifying this is not allowing that individual to vote on the matter. And I think that that's the real hard line here, that we're not saying that can be overridden and waived, but they should be able to contribute. So at this point, I am supportive of this bill because I want the transparency to the public. I don't like that there's conversations happening off record that people are unaware of, and the more transparency that we have with the public of what these conversations are, the more trust we can build in the Board of Fish and in our public process.
Thank you, Representative Vance. Those are really great comments. Appreciate you sharing them. Anybody else have any comments? Speaker Suits.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The one thing I would add is the one nice thing about this legislation is it treats everybody equally. It doesn't treat any sector, whether it be comfish or sport fish or any of the different sectors, whether it be fish or game, it treats everybody equally. And that's really what, as Representative Vance said, it allows an extra layer of transparency. So thank you.
Thank you. Oh, Representative McCabe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think in general I'm supportive of the idea of this bill. I agree with Representative Vance that it's important to get all the conversation on the record instead of off the record so that we can see it later. I also think that my friends who are sport fishermen who may not support this bill, perhaps they would understand that at some point they might be on the other end of things where they want to have a excellent sport fisherman board member speak on the record for them. And I just, I'm waffling. I'm kind of like Rep Vance. I'm yes, no, because there's two different groups on two different sides. And I think in general, this bill kind of surprisingly highlights the distrust and the divisiveness that has happened between comfish and sportfish. We're all going after the same resource. And I mean, we all recognize the big elephant in the room. And at some point, we, I think, as a committee, need to fix that. Mm-hmm. And I still don't know, I guess, but in general, I'm supportive of the concept.
Thank you, Representative McCabe. And I guess what I'll just add in is in terms of my support, kind of getting a little more intimate with the board process, just it's so involved, and people, you know, really need to be dedicated and have that kind of time and commitment to be a really good board member. And so I don't know that, you know, we can always expect that there's a lot of Alaskans each time to really fill that and then also have that good representation between the regions and the backgrounds. So I think, you know, it just makes me feel more comfortable that it can be disclosed and everything can be on the record, much more similar to what we do with the legislature and even more liberal in the legislature because people still vote, even though they could have a declared conflict of interest. So this will, you know, still won't be what the legislature has, but it'll at least allow those deliberations on the record. And I really agree with that transparency component of as well. Representative Story.
Hi, yes, thank you, Chair Tarr. I would have to say that as an elected school board member for 15 years, and we got to vote on issues and express our opinions, I do think it is very helpful to have most of the conversations on the record at the table when they come up. I realize someone testified they could testify, leave their chair and testify in front of the body. But I do think there are several conversations and times, and I think it just expedites them to have them at the table and to be able to share their thoughts. It's not going to prohibit side conversations from happening, but I think they will be done more at the committee level, and the public, I think, will appreciate hearing those, whether they agree with them or not. At least they really know what people are thinking. So thank you.
Thank you. Oh, Representative Vance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a question for Glenn Haight, kind of a little bit more about process here.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully, Mr. Haight. Okay, perfect. Go ahead.
Thank you. I was just asking, just came to mind in our conversations of putting myself in the Board of Fish situation. What discretion does the chair have to kind of limit dialogue that if the chair were to feel that a member who has a financial conflict, who is offering deliberations, if they felt like the conversation was ethically going a little too far, what discretion does the chair have to limit that so that it doesn't provide undue influence over the vote?
Thank you. Glenn Haight, Executive Director for the Alaska Board of Fisheries, through the chair, Representative Vance. The chair would have, I think, the ability to stop the conversation and maybe take a break, get with the board member and talk to him about it and explain their conflicts and concerns. So I think that's the chair does have that discretion.
Follow up? Mm-hmm. Has there been any examples in the past where a chair has exercised that discretion where they felt like something, where there were some concerns that, has it happened in the past that the chair has exercised that power, that authority?
Yeah, Glenn Haight of the Alaska Board of Fisheries, through the chair, Representative Vance. Yeah, we actually had an example of that last year. We had a board member who was recused from working on a suite of proposals, and we were just in staff reports. So it's at the beginning of the meeting, and everyone sits through that. And there was a line of questioning from one board member, and this board member came back with another line of questioning, which was really starting to get at argument building. And so that was a time where, between the board chair and Department of Law representative, they realized it was probably going too far, stopped the meeting, and had that conversation.
Thank you. I think that answers a little more of the concerns that there is another mechanism of a safety net, that if there was undue influence taking place, that the chair could say, wait a minute, this is getting unethical, shaky ground, and I think the public needs to know that the chair has that discretion as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate really good comments about this legislation, and definitely speaks to how important the resource is for all of us. Any other comments? Okay, well, if there are no other comments, Madam Speaker, I would entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move to report House Bill 26. Wait, we didn't vote on moving it out, did we?
We're going to see if we have to vote right now.
Okay. Thanks. I move to report House Bill 26, Conflict of Interest, Board of Fisheries and Game, version 32-LS0277/A, from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Object.
Okay. Do you want to speak to your objection? Okay. Then could we please have the clerk, committee secretary, please call the roll? Wonder. Brief at ease. heard at 11:21 a.m. Madam Speaker, could you restate the motion, please? We had a number wrong.
Yes, Madam Chair, I would withdraw my first motion and make a motion. I move to report House Bill 26, Conflict of Interest, Board of Fish and Game, version 32-LS0227/A, from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Object.
Okay. And do you want to speak to this objection? Okay. Thank you, Representative McCabe. Okay, and now then, could we please ask Ms. McCain to call the roll?
Good morning, Madam Chair. Representative Kreitz-Tompkins?
Yes.
Representative Story?
Yes.
Representative Ortiz?
Yes.
Representative Vance?
Yes.
Representative McCabe?
No.
Representative Speaker Stute?
Yes.
Chair Tarr?
Yes.
We have 6 yeas, 1 nay.
Thank you. And so by a vote of 6 yea and 1 nay, House Bill 26 will advance to the next committee of referral. And we'll just pass the paperwork along as we're continuing to move on, if that's okay with everyone. What we're going to do now is transition to House Bill 54. And we have a few things here. We're hoping to get to a little more detailed introduction and then hear from Commissioner Vincent Lang about the fiscal note. And then we have public testimony. We have a handful of people signed up, so I'm hoping if we get to that part by about 10 till or quarter till, then we'll be able to get through all the public testimony. So, Mr. Brower, would you like to come forward and we can just pass this paperwork around?
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Thatcher Brower, and I'm staff to the House Fisheries Committee. In follow-up to the brief introduction Chair Tarr gave last Thursday, as well as an invited testimony that set the stage for why this bill is needed, I'm going to offer a more formal bill introduction and go through the sectional analysis. House Bill 54, Invasive Species Management, does three things. It establishes an Invasive Species Council, creates an Invasive Species Response Fund, and sets a way for the department to create and sell invasive species management decals. Of these three things, the most important is establishing the Alaska Invasive Species Council in the Department of Fish and Game. The council is made up of representatives from state and federal agencies, as well as tribal, non-governmental, business, and industry stakeholders.
And then I just wanted to add a little bit to that, that this idea came from the Washington Invasive Species Council, and you'll see a letter of support from them. The director attended the 2018 meeting of the Alaska Invasive Species Partnership and shared with the members in attendance, over 100 people, why this was such an effective model and how it had helped them engage stakeholders and keep the business community kept connected to the government, connected to the scientific community.
Thank you, Chair Tarr. One of the council's responsibilities is preparing and presenting a 5-year strategic plan that addresses the economic effects of invasive species, the council's priorities for addressing invasive species, and recommends legislation and funding required to implement the council's priorities. An updated version of the strategic plan is introduced to the legislature or given to the legislature every odd year, so every other year. I will also provide more information on the council and the sectional analysis. The second thing House Bill 54 does is establish an invasive species response fund in the general fund. The department may use the money appropriated to the fund to manage invasive species. While the fund is established in the bill, at this time there is not a dedicated funding source aside from the profits from the sale of invasive species decals, which I'll discuss next. However, at a later date, additional fund sources could be established. Go ahead and just add in here.
And on this, what I wanted to add is, we've been working on this bill for a few years now, and so it gave us the opportunity to explore many different funding mechanisms, including something with the ferry ticket, because people are bringing watercraft. The ferry folks have recently updated their ticketing system and said it's a really big deal to do. So whenever that happens again would be the time to kind of interject ourselves there. We looked at doing any kind of registration fee with planes, but of course that's all federal, so that wasn't really a good opportunity. We did look at the DMV and potentially an additional kind of registration fee on, say, snow machine or four-wheeler or other watercraft that requires registration, because those can be vectors. But that has been a mechanism that's been looked at in a few different pieces of legislation, like the derelict vessel bill. And then also more recently, we've seen some issues with DMV fees. So it was sort of seeming like it might start stacking on top of each other. And so we, you know, didn't do that. And then, you know, working with multiple stakeholders this summer, explored some of these other options. And this recommendation for the decal actually came from folks from Harding Lake and former Senator Gary Wilkin, who is a part of this Harding Lake kind of the association for, you know, people that have homes on the lake. And they've got an Elodia problem there. And he said, you know, we recommend doing something voluntary to start, because people don't like mandates, and, you know, and there's a motivated group here. People want to, you know, have access to their properties, and they, you know it can be a significant problem. So let's start with this voluntary decal and, you know, use that as a way to sort of engage people, educate them, and then provide a way for them to financially contribute towards management. So that's the genesis of this, sort of after exploring all of these other different options and just thinking, is there a way that you can start to, you know, get a few dollars towards the problem? Yes, Representative Grace Tompkins.
And just a really quick comment, really appreciate that background. And I think I've said earlier, I'm really excited or motivated about any way to create funding, even as a part of this bill, and just, you know, maybe down the line can maybe explore if there's a Dingell-Johnson nexus that we could explore, or also the other piece of legislation, I think it was HB 80 that we passed out, that designated a portion of the surcharge for invasives. If there's some way to kind of connect the dots between those two and this bill, I at least would be very interested in that.
Thank you. And Commissioner Vincent Lang is going to help connect those dots when we get to the fiscal note. So thank you for bringing that up. Representative McCabe.
Thank you, Chair Tarr. So I am very interested in this bill. I'm not interested in a fiscal note. So we have discussed many, many times several times, you and I, in fact, the little tiny pieces of funding in many different spots mm-hmm. for invasive species. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to find a way to consolidate those mm-hmm. and put it in here. And I'm not sure the vehicle for doing that, but I don't think that... I don't think taking it out of the general fund is the answer. Mm-hmm. Other states do it with trailer registration for boat trailers, mm-hmm. It doesn't seem to be too egregious. Mm-hmm. Similar to the small surcharge on our fishing licenses for the hatcheries. Mm-hmm. We need to find a way to do that, and I'm sorry, I just won't be able to support it with a fiscal note with the money attached to it in this budget climate right now, even though I think it's great, and I would pay personally to have the pike removed from my lake, but a fiscal note is a killer for me, so.
Well, I really appreciate those comments, and I hope we'll be able to address those concerns, and hopefully when Commissioner Vincent Lang, I know he's online, so I'm mentioning him sort of to bookmark these comments. I'm hoping we'll be able to come back to him and then come back to your comments after that, if we could. Representative Vance.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Along the same line, would you describe how you see this optional invasive species management decal, how this would work? Because in the fiscal note, it says the department estimates to collect 3.9 annually based on the average of fish and wildlife conservation stamps that were sold between 2017 and 2019. So can you talk about how that conservation stamp program works and how you foresee this optional invasive species decal working that could generate money?
Yes. And we'll just talk go to that right now, and that's no problem at all. It's a little bit in the sectional too, but just to give a sense of this. So the reason that was used as a comparative one is that's also a voluntary one, and right now you can go online and where you can do other online purchases for fishing licenses, there's also an add-on option for this other conservation decal. So it's kind of envisioned in that same way. From what I understand in working with Tammy Davis at Department of Fish and Game, you know, when we discuss this option, there's not a lot of promotion of that right now, and I think that's why you see a lower dollar amount coming in on the revenue. So then, you know, basing this one off of that similar expected revenue, what we heard from the folks, there's a very engaged group of Alaskans on this topic, and, you know, at the Alaska Invasive Species Partnership meetings, for example, normally more than 100 people. So, you know, you have at least a core group of people across the state that are very engaged, and like I said, from the folks at Harding Lake, you know, they were indicating to us, you know, we want to find a way to contribute. We know the state needs to do this management. You know, here's something. They liked the voluntary option, like I say, over some kind of, you know, mandatory thing. Now, I'm not opposed to looking at, you know, like Representative McCabe said, the option for a boat trailer or other registration. It's just that as we've been working on this over the last few years, and it's actually, Representative McCabe, a problem you've highlighted a few times, when you see these pieces of legislation where, you know, you can see there's sort of these things all happening around each other, but you feel like it could be more cohesive. And there were two or three pieces of legislation all moving at the same time that we're considering these DMV fees, and so that just made me, you know, want to be cautious about it so we didn't unnecessarily or inadvertently, you know, really stack things on top of people unexpectedly because, you know, a few things were happening. So I'm definitely interested in that, and I think and not to speak to what the commissioner might say, but when we talked about the fiscal note, it sounds like, you know, it does seem like there could be some federal grant opportunities, as well as if 80 goes through additional with the amendment, Representative Vance, that put the language in there for invasive species management, that could actually create a funding stream as well. So I think it would be premature to count on that because that bill is still, you know, under consideration right now and then hopefully stays in the current form. But it opened up an opportunity is how I hope I'm fairly characterizing that. And again, would feel more comfortable just letting the commissioner speak to that in greater detail so I don't, you know, sort of overstep or say something I shouldn't. Okay. Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair Vance. My question had to do with the cost of the decal. I can't remember exactly what it was. I want to say 20, 25. I could look it up here. And I'm wondering why that amount was picked, because, as you say, there are many people who believe in this and want to put some dollars and show their support for it. And people are in a very different space when it's voluntary. Some people have not been impacted as much by our pandemic. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious the price they picked and why.
That does not have a lot of exact science to it, I would say, Representative Story. This Representative Tarr was trying to pick a price that you know, people didn't sort of express shock at, I guess would be the reaction. So if it's $100, do people say, wow, you know, what do I get for $100? Kind of, you know, putting in that price range where people felt like, okay, this is worth contributing, you know, it's not onerous, sort of just picking a number that, you know, felt reasonable.
Thank you.
And I guess what I'll just say right now about the decal, because it's also sort of reflected in the fiscal note in a way that's not entirely how it was envisioned and hopefully could be updated, but the idea is that this could actually be kind of a fun contest kind of like opportunity where an Alaska artist might want to submit something and then, you know, it's the decal for the year and there could be some recognition associated with that. And that's been successful for State Council on the Arts, for example, have done different contests for, you know, just different designs when those things come available. So that was kind of the vision to minimize any needed administrative support from the department, that it could be run through the council as this opportunity. Yes, Representative McCabe.
Thank you, Chair Tarr. If I could just make two more comments. One concerns the decal and the way that we are going to fund this. I'm reminded of the snow track funding, where we paid $20 to decal a snow machine, and then it's one of the first things stripped out of the budget. So that's of concern to me, even if this is voluntary. And the second concern I have totally escapes me at the moment. So
when it comes back to you, we'll be waiting for it. But okay, thank you. So the commissioner needs to leave in about 10 minutes. So I'm just thinking maybe the remainder of what Mr. Brower was going to say was going to talk a little bit more about the decal and the fund. And so we probably covered that. If you want to look to the sectional, the specifics of what the council will do are outlined in the second part of the second and third sections of section one. And so perhaps we should try to get those on the record, Mr. Brower, and then we'll call on the commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, again, Thatcher Brower, staff to the House Fisheries Committee. So if you're looking at the sectional analysis, section one, section.16.20.800 establishes the invasive species management decals that we were just talking about. The heart of the bill is section 1620.810. This is where the Alaska Invasive Species Council is established. It'll be comprised of representatives from the Departments of Fish and Game, Natural Resources, Environmental Conservation, and Transportation and Public Facilities. The council will also have members from stakeholder organizations and industries appointed by the governor. The council will be responsible for facilitating cooperation between state, federal, tribal, and local agencies, as well as non-governmental organizations, all in the management of invasive species. The council will also be tasked with recommending coordinating interagency strategies and policies relating to the management of invasive species. The council will provide guidance on how to prioritize the response and how to best use the funds in the Invasive Species Response Fund. And finally, the council will also be responsible for designing the invasive species control decals.
Thank you, Mr. Brower. In the interest of time, I think if we could have Commissioner Vincent Lang join us, and if we could talk a little bit about the fiscal note, and hopefully you heard those earlier comments that I had made based on our follow-up conversation. But again, I apologize if I got ahead of any comments that you would have made yourself.
Okay, Madam Chair, so this is Doug Vincent Lang with Fish and Game. We discussed a little bit about how we would approach this council if this legislation was passed at the last committee hearing. And it's my intent that we wouldn't start this council until we were able to secure funding either through a federal grant or through a patchwork of different monies that would allow this council to proceed. I understand the issues related with general funds, to use this, and I understand the consternation with appropriating general funds. I'll let OMB speak to whether or not the bill can proceed with a fiscal note that doesn't have other funding sources available. But I see value in this effort, and I would look for I think there's a high probability of Fish and Game being able to get federal funding or a patchwork of different fundings that would enable this to move forward. And again, it'd be my intent to not form the council and meet until we have that other funding sources available and secured.
Thank you, Commissioner. I really appreciate that. Any questions for the commissioner?
But Madam Chair, I would also recommend that you get OMB on the record to discuss their concerns about the fiscal note, because the fiscal note came out of OMB, and I think we have our OMB liaison online, Dana Mackey, that could speak to that.
Okay, okay, so here we have, thank you, Commissioner, and I know you only have about 5 more minutes, so I hope we'll be able to get through these questions with you online. Ms. Mackey, if you're available, could you help us understand that a little bit more?
Yes, for the record, this is Dana Mackey, Administrative Services Director for Fish and Game through Office of Management and Budget. Representative Chair Tarr, I wanted just to mention that it isn't customary to budget or fiscal note practice to appropriate fund sources and grants that are not available with certainty, and that if a federal grant does become available for this function when the legislature is not in session, the RPL process can be used. That was all that I was going to mention.
Okay, and just to make sure that I understand and for just a little bit of clarity, right now the fiscal note would reflect using, you know, general funds for the $60,000 that it would be needed annually to support the council. But what Commissioner Vincent Lang has said is, you know, he thinks there could be some federal funds out there through grants and then possibly other funding streams. But what you're saying is, you know, you wouldn't update a fiscal note to reflect that because it's prospective rather than already in hand.
Chair Tarr, that is correct, yes. Until the funding is actually known, the funding source would have to be UGF.
Thank you very much. Representative Vance.
And then yes, thank you for that. Would it be appropriate to put contingency language in the bill and have a fiscal note that was DGF with contingency language that if federal funds became available, that the department could proceed with the council? What is the best recommendation, is to have contingency language or wait until next year after we know that there are funds available?
Through the chair, Representative Vance, the contingent language, I'm not, as Thatcher had mentioned, is that there is nothing right now in the bill that says what the funding source will be. That contingent language could possibly help to be able to identify what the funding source will be for this. But at this point, as the bill is written, the information that's in it, there is no funding source, and so the only funding source and the only guaranteed money that we know of at this point is the UGF.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I just want to say, and before either you, Ms. Mackey, or the Commissioner, the only concern I have about that is sort of the chicken or the egg, because I think you probably can't apply for the grants before the council exists, because you'd be applying for the grants to support the council. So that is something I'd like to ask you to respond to. But Representative McCabe has a question as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So what I'm concerned with is I heard the commissioner say he could do this without a fiscal note and that the fiscal note was inserted by OMB. So I'm confused. The commissioner says he doesn't need money to do this, and the Office of Management and Budget says, oh, no, yes, you do, and we're going to put a person towards it, too, a part-time person. So I'm sorry, I'm a rookie, but I'm a little confused.
So maybe we could have Commissioner Vincent Lang respond and then Ms. Mackey.
Yeah, Madam Chair, again, it's my intent to try to find additional funding outside of UGF, knowing the issues that the legislature is facing with UGF funding, to proceed with this invasive species council. And I'm convinced that there's money out there. And I think you're right. It's the chicken and the egg argument that, you know, how can you get money if you don't have the council formed? I understand that. And I guess I would urge you guys to look at, and I'd be willing to work with you on, some kind of contingency language that says the council is not formed until we have that alternative funding sources available. I do understand OMB's position that if you create the council and there's no funding available for it, that the only way you can implement that council, which is in my shop, is to have UGF identified. So we're trying to look for a way that we can get this council formed, develop recommendations on invasive species that doesn't cost the state UGF money, and I'm convinced that funding stream may be available out there. I just don't have it secured yet because, you know, this is early in the process of dealing with it. So, and again, I turn it over to OMB since I think we tried to identify a compromise here, but I think rightfully so, they identified that that's not secure money, so they're trying to figure out how they put an appropriate fiscal note together. And again, Dana can speak to that.
I have a follow-up, but it's for OMB, so whenever.
Okay, so Ms. Mackey, if you could speak to that, and then Representative McCabe has a follow-up for you.
Chair Tara, I don't have anything else to add to what Commissioner Vincent Lang just spoke to. It is true that the contingency language may be able to help and be able to set what the funding source is, and saying that until that is able to be established, then that's when it can move on. But at this point, the UGF is the only thing that's identifiable.
Okay, thank you. And Representative McCabe has a follow-up.
Thank you, Chair Tarr. So I'm curious if we put this in with a $99,000 or $100,000 fiscal note for the first year, and then 62.4 for 23 and on, and the commissioner does find additional funding for it, and it seems like a small little pot of money, but what happens to the money that we appropriated for this program, and now the commissioner has found some grant money or federal money or whatever kind of money, or it's coming out of HB 80 funds, then what happens to the $100,000 that we just appropriated?
Through the chair, Representative McCabe, a very good question. So in the budget process, if other funding is identified, there can be a very easy, through the next legislative session, there could be a fund source change, changing the fund source from UGF to whatever is identified. If there is federal, as I had mentioned before, if there is anything that is federal that comes through when the legislature is not in session, an RPL process can be used to be able to get that funding a little bit quicker. And then in the next legislative session, there could be a decrease of the 62.4 or decrease of the 99.5. Whatever it may be, but there is a way to change that UGF through the budget process.
Thank you.
Okay. If there aren't any other questions on that, if we could sort of bookmark that, because we want to take time to address everybody's concerns, and then we'll do the public testimony. We're not trying to move this bill or anything, and you know, would love to continue working with everyone on the ideas and questions that have come up. Is that okay? Okay, thank you so much. Okay, thank you, Commissioner Vincent Lang, and thank you, Ms. Mackey. Really appreciate your help with us understanding that today. Mm-hmm. We're going to go ahead and go to public testimony, and I'm going to try to limit the public testimony to 2 minutes per person, and that way we'll hopefully get through everyone. I'm going to start with Tim Stallard from Anchorage Cooperative Invasive Species Management. Mr. Stallard?
I just got unmuted. Yes, this is Tim Stallard. Thank you. I'm a private consultant on invasive species management based here in Anchorage. Speaking today on behalf of the Anchorage Cooperative Invasive Species Management Area. And our philosophy is that invasive species do not respect land ownership boundaries, so we need to coordinate and work together to protect our natural resources from degradation by harmful species. And as you previously mentioned, the Alaska Invasive Species Partnership has a similar philosophy at a statewide level. So important coordination and management across the state are already taking place by my colleagues and I, but the current coordination is voluntary and driven by the personal commitment and passion of dedicated colleagues from state, local, nonprofit, tribal, university, as well as federal entities. We are so lucky in Alaska to have vast and relatively healthy fisheries and other natural resources. These resources, of course, are fundamental to our lives as Alaskans. As you all know, we depend on these resources for jobs, food, recreation, and culture. Meanwhile, introduced invasive species have the potential to disrupt all of this. Our cold climate and relative geographic isolation has slowed the arrival and spread of invasive species, but these threats are here and will continue to increase in the future. So to protect our fisheries and other resources, we need to actively prevent and rapidly respond to harmful new invaders. This requires coordination across our vast state. So to adequately protect our fisheries and other resources, we need to step up our coordination with the formation of the Alaska Invasive Species Council, as outlined in this bill, HB 54. So the Alaska Invasive Species Council would bring high-level coordination from Fish and Game, DNR, DEC, transportation and public facilities, together with commercial, local, federal, Alaska Native, and other interests. Alaska needs this high-level coordination to protect our fisheries and other natural resources into the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Stallard. Appreciate your testimony. Any questions for the testifier? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Next, we're going to go to Summer Nay from Delta Junction.
Yes, hello, and thank you, Representative Tarr, members of the House Fisheries Committee, for allowing me this time. My name is Summer Nay. I serve as the Invasive Species Plans Program Coordinator in Delta Junction. I'm a member of the Alaska Invasive Species Partnerships, and I'm a member of the Outreach and Education Subcommittee. I offer this testimony in support of House Bill 54 as an individual based on my perspectives and experience gained while working and living in the interior of Alaska. I live and work in one of Alaska's largest agricultural regions. Here, commercial hay and grain crops are produced. The Richardson and Alaska highways are two major roads that carry traffic into the district from populated areas of Alaska and Canada. Both agriculture and roads are major vectors for the introduction of invasive terrestrial species, resulting in costly and damaging infestations that pose threats to our natural and agricultural resources. Water bodies are also under threat in the interior. The aquatic invasive plant species Elodia is a species that has been identified in up to 10 water bodies in the interior. Watercraft and human transportation are the main vectors for the introduction of the species to freshwater systems. Elodia causes serious irreversible harm to aquatic habitats, resulting in the degradation of fisheries if given the opportunity to spread. This beautiful state is under threat. Only with the help from local, state, tribal, and federal collaboration will it not perish. I believe that the passing of the House Bill 54 will establish statutory expectation and motivate overdue coordination and institutional leadership towards invasive species prevention and management. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Nay. Really great comments. Appreciate it. Any questions for the testifier? Representative McCabe has a question.
Thank you. And what did you say the organization you were with was again?
Oh, I didn't. I work in Delta Junction for the Salcha Delta Soil and Water Conservation District.
Okay. But you were, okay, thank you.
I think also with Alaska Invasive Species Partnership.
Right. So exactly, what I'm curious of is this one and the last one is how their organizations, if they have a separate one, such as Anchorage, how it's funded.
Mm. I don't know if you were able to hear that, Ms. Nay, but I, what I think you could speak to that might help, like with the Delta Soil and Water Conservation District, how are you currently funded for the invasive species work that you're doing?
We fund ourselves, private funding.
So, okay, thank you.
Okay. Oh, Representative Christ Tompkins has a question as well.
Thank you. Just to follow up on that, so the soil and water, and this has always just kind of been a blind spot to me, the Soil and Water Conservation Districts in Alaska, yours or others, don't receive any public funding, including federal funding?
Correct.
Thank you.
Thank you. And that would be a topic we could cover on another day, because some are very active and some have, like, lost their leadership, and so it's, but some doing very important work, like Ms. Nay. Thank you. Okay, we'll go to the next testifier, David Martin.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is David Martin. I'm from Klamath Gulch, Alaska, and I've been involved in fish and game issues in Alaska for 50 years now. I fully support Bill 54 for the need for rapid response to invasive species. This is long past due. It started at least 6 years ago. I supported it then, tried to get it moving, but had some stumbling blocks in the way of it. To be proactive and on the offense, the sooner the better and the cheaper when you address invasive species. you have a chance to eradicate them before they establish a toehold and change the ecosystem forever. Classic example is the pike and the drainage. Came in the 60s. There's been at least 8 lakes in the Susitna drainage that have nothing but pike in them. You're never going to eradicate them, but you can manage them. I'm also involved with Aquaculture Association that does a lot of the pike work up there. Salmon production down substantially in the Susitna drainage because of pike. Now the Elodia came into the Susitna drainage. Example there is the Alexander Lake. It started out in 5 acres from a floatplane. For $15,000, we could have eradicated it. But without a rapid response, by the time action was taken, the whole lake was infested. It's going to take over $1 million to treat that lake and hopefully eradicate it from that. University of Alaska put out a report that Elodia alone would cost the state of Alaska $100 million in annual losses from salmon production and floatplanes and recreational activities. And now we have a zebra mussel that came into Alaska just lately through the pet stores. And they are very disastrous. They've wiped out the fisheries in the Great Lakes. Alaska is fortunate that we get ahead of most of these invasive species. And House Bill 54 will help. We also need to have the will. We need to have the money, the education, and the rapid response to do so. We also need stricter laws to not allow invasive species to get into Alaska in the first place, and stricter enforcement and penalties for those who do bring them in and who spread them throughout Alaska. Please forward and approve House Bill 54, and thank you for all your time and effort. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Really appreciate your comments today. We have a question from Representative Vance.
Hi, Dave. I was wondering if USEDA has taken a position on this bill at this time.
Yeah, I'm involved with quite a few organizations. Yeah, you see that it's supportive of the bill. I'll sit on the Fish and Game Advisory Committee. We've addressed this bill in the past and supported it. Of course, Aquaculture does, Cooking and Fishing Fund. So it would be kind of foolish not to support it.
I have.
I could say, you look at Florida and these other places, invasive species just decimated their state. And we're lucky that we can hopefully get in the forefront of this. So there's a lot of support for it.
I have one quick follow-up. Dave, have you seen the pike personally in the Cook Inlet? I know I've heard reports of some pike straying into the Cook Inlet. Have you experienced that yourself?
I've been involved with the pike suppression by Aquaculture and Fish and Game on the lakes in the Kenai Peninsula, and they've eradicated it basically from every lake. There's one up north to a point of possession. We've also been instrumental in the Aquaculture's effort for the pike suppression in the Susitna drainage. I was instrumental in getting the Shell Lake rehabilitation to salvage the genetic pool for the sockeye in that system, and we have a current program going on where we net pike in various lakes up there to increase the salmon production in them. There's some lakes you're not going to be able to do, but yeah, there's been a lot of effort put into the pike suppression. So that's why I'm hoping that in this bill we'll eliminate invasive species so you don't have a pike issue where you annually have to curtail their numbers, or you lose production, and you're going to lose production anyway from the population that are in there.
All right, thanks, Dave.
Thank you. We have one last testifier, if we could squeeze in Catherine Schenke from Homer Soil and Water Conservation, and if anybody has to go, I understand, but we'll try and do this so we can close public testimony.
Thank you for this opportunity, Representative Garantar and the House Fisheries Committee. My name is Catherine Schenke, and I'm a board member of the Alaska Invasive Species Partnership, and I'm speaking today on behalf of Homer Soil and Water Conservation District, who I'm an employee of, and the Kenai Peninsula Cooperative Invasive Species Management Area, or SISMA, which is a partnership of state and federal agencies, nonprofits, and tribes. On the Kenai, we have successfully eradicated Elodia from 5 lakes and northern pike from 17 lakes. We maintain a priority invasive plant list, to keep the most harmful non-native plants out of our salmon and moose habitat. While eradication efforts for some species have been successful, we are losing the battle with others, like reed canarygrass and orange hawkweed, European green crabs, which could destroy our aquaculture efforts in Prince William Sound and Kachemak Bay, are marching northward and were discovered in British Columbia last July. Zebra mussels have been found in mothballs, sold in aquariums in Anchorage and Soldotna. And as the coordinator of a high-functioning partnership that has successfully tackled invasive species infestations across the Kenai for the last 17 years, I can say that we are at our limit. We need help to detect and prevent the introduction of new species. The soil and water conservation districts are stretched very thin. We write proposals, integrated pest management plans, fundraise, apply for state permits to ensure compliance, and implement control of the most harmful invasive plants along highways and roads, which is the primary vector of terrestrial invasives. The reason the Seward and Sterling highways aren't covered in bird vetch and white sweet clover is because of the SISMA partnership and the soil and water districts. As you mentioned earlier, the soil and water districts have no state funding, and yet we are managing DOT's vegetation and their right-of-ways for them. This is not a long-term solution, and it requires so much effort that we don't have the bandwidth to respond when new invasive species show up. Furthermore, the state's ability to update and maintain a noxious weed list is critical to protecting agriculture and native ecosystems. The Division of Agriculture needs support in order to provide the service of evaluating and prohibiting the sale of harmful plants. So considering all of these, establishing an invasive species council would really help elevate these conversations to a higher level of government and provide a conduit for education about the most pressing threats to our salmon and wildlife habitat. Creating an invasive species council, enabling the Department of Fish and Game to implement prevention measures, and establishing a fund for rapid response are critical to increase our success of protecting local economies and livelihoods. So we are offering our support in HB 54. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Really helpful information. Any questions for our testifier? Representative Story has a question.
Thank you, Chair Tara. Just through the chair, I would really appreciate if you had those comments written up to get a copy for the committee here. They're just very good examples, and I would prefer to have that to reference. Thank you.
Thank you. And, Catherine, if you could send that in, then we could certainly share your comments with the committee members. That'd be great.
Absolutely.
Thank you. I don't see anyone else online to testify. I don't have anyone in the room. I'm going to close public testimony. We're holding this bill over for further consideration, and since we're running over at this time, if there's no other business to come before the committee, I'll adjourn at 12:03 p.m.